Warning, this episode contains spoilers.
If it's something that's really well done the first time, it's not broken, stop trying to smash it.
I'm always intrigued to see what it is that people are going to do with something that's already been done before.
I hate remakes.
I love remakes.
Welcome everybody to the second episode of I Hate Slash Love Remakes. Today we'll be discussing the 1961 film The Parent Trap and its 1998 remake of the same name. Both films tell the story about two identical girls who discover one another at a summer camp. They learn they were twins separated when their parents divorced and decide to swap places so each can meet the parent they've never known. When they discover the father has gotten himself engaged to a new woman, they decide to break that engagement up and bring their parents back together. All right, joining me today, as always, is Evie.
Hello. I don't have any coffee this time. Sad.
Also joining us is a friend that we both know from Twitter. Everyone, please welcome Carrie.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
So, Carrie, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, I can juggle geese.
I love you.
All right, okay. Firefly references aside, all serious now, I'm a history major in my third year at Stephen F. Austin State University. In this tiny, tiny town in Texas called Nacogdoches.
Now, is everything bigger in Texas?
Maybe it's like the Texas equivalent of Reno, the biggest little town in the world.
Well, it was the very first town founded in Texas.
Ah. All right, so Carrie, why don't you tell us, what are your feelings in general when it comes to remakes?
I think it was Evie who said this in the preview episode, if it's not broken, don't smash it. And also, I think there should be maybe a time space. In other words, don't try to remake a movie from like 10 years ago. I think that's just way too soon. Like with the whole Buffy movie coming out, it was only been, what, 7-8 years since the show ended?
Yeah, but it's a remake of a film that's 18 years old.
No, but they're making it based off of the series, I thought.
No, they don't have the rights to the series. They only have the rights to the original movie, so nothing in the series is going to be in the new Buffy movie.
I just don't think movies from like the 80s or the 70s need to be remade yet.
Well, the 70s need to be remade just for the fashion.
Well, what I meant was, like, certain movies, like King Kong, that was understandable. That was from not even only before the 20s, if I'm right.
The last one was made in the 70s.
No, what? I don't think anyone really remembers that one, though.
Yeah, with good reason.
But I think, like, something like Psycho could have been stayed away from. Like, if it was, like, a big classic hit and it was received well.
There are certain lawns that should just be stayed off of.
Yes. Like, if they ever go near something like Casablanca or Gone with the Wind, I will storm the studios with a lynch mob. Storm. With pitchforks.
I'm currently not standing by with my torch and pitchfork at all.
I totally want to see a Gone with the Wind remake.
Don't you even.
Sergio Leone tried for decades. He just couldn't get the rights to it.
Why would you want to remake that?
Because he thought there were parts of the book that the film didn't really capture that well. He was a huge fan of the book.
It was a movie made in 1936. They could only do so much.
Yes, and thus now you have a chance to update it.
No, leave it.
Yes, evil laugh. I'll let Evie do my evil laugh for me. So, why don't we go ahead and move on to The Parent Trap, which was a 1961 film from Walt Disney Studios, written and directed by David Swift, who had just previously done Pollyanna, which also starred Haley Mills. So, what did you guys think of the original Parent Trap? Carrie, why don't we start with you?
I think for its time, it was pretty good. I don't really get why they didn't have her try an American accent when she was English, and one twin's from Boston and the other one's from California.
Oh, she's trying. She's desperately trying and just not succeeding.
Not like Lindsay Lohan, who actually did pretty well.
Yeah.
I did think there were moments that were just kind of over-the-top cheesy, but I'm not entirely sure how the progress of Disney films were by this point. I know there were big, giant, like, animated hits. So as far as, like, regular live action, I'm not sure how well they did on those.
Oh, yeah. They were having quite a bit of success with them from the mid-50s on.
So I liked it, but I think I liked the remake more.
All right, Evie, what do you think about the original?
Oh, God, there's so many different things that I like and don't like, mostly don't like. But I don't know, the original, it's more like, this is a really great idea. I hope someone does it better someday. There's so much of it where it's, I think for me, it's a pacing issue where they're like, now we'll be doing this. And then they just do that.
It is a very long film, yeah.
Yeah. Which the other one is about the same length, but you don't feel it.
Hmm.
Whereas this one, I'm like, okay, I've been at this for a while now.
Yeah.
So it kind of seemed they were at camp for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, for like 40 minutes, yeah. Yeah, everything did seem to kind of take its time to let everything play out. And it is kind of a complex story, but they did kind of take their time. Unless it can feel a little slow at times. Here's a question to throw out there. What do you guys think of the film's portrayal of divorce? One of the problems I have with this film is the notion that because the parents never remarried, that secretly means they're still in love with one another.
Yeah. Well, when you see the parents together, you're sort of like, why were these people ever married?
Yeah. They actually kind of give you a good reason why they separated in that every time they get into a conversation, it turns into a giant shouting match and she eventually gets violent.
Exactly. I love that. The punching someone means you love them.
Yes. I love that nice meaty thwack.
Yeah.
And then she just instantly turns passive, like, oh no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I ain't gonna hurt you no more, baby. I ain't gonna hurt you no more.
Yes.
I like the clothes.
The clothes were so pretty.
Yeah.
Did you notice that, like, everyone kind of has a brighter wardrobe, but once Maureen O'Hara shows up, the other women in the movie seem to get sort of blander clothing?
They're toned down a little bit, and she's all vibrant. Yeah, well, I mean, I think Maureen O'Hara does that with her personality, too.
Yeah.
She was kind of the biggest actor of the, I mean, biggest in terms of acting in the entire film. She was not subtle.
One of the things that really bothered me was how the actress that played Vicky, how much older she looked than Maureen O'Hara.
Yeah, they kept making an issue about how young she is, and she looks about the same age.
Well, I actually went and checked on it, and she would have been about, I think, 26 when the movie was made. And I'm like, she looks older than Maureen O'Hara, who was 14 years older than the actress.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
she was about 40, 41 when she made that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so was Brian Keith. And yeah, it's, the woman playing Vicky, I think it's because she has this kind of grayish hair.
It was supposed to be blonde, but the way that they filmed it, it photographs gray.
It was blonde in the same way Anderson Cooper is.
Yeah, there we go.
That's something that's always struck me, is how they keep saying, she's so young, she's so young, she's so young. She doesn't look as young, yet she actually is, and it's just such a weird thing.
It's probably nitpicking on my end, but when they're talking about the parents, I think it was Karen who had the big photo of her father in this giant frame.
Yes.
I did not get that. Like, they had smaller frames back then.
She had it in a photo album, and then the picture of the mother was in, like, this big ornate oval frame.
Okay. Does no one need...
Yeah, especially if you're going to take it to summer camp with you. I mean, they did have wallet-sized photos back then.
You know what? I'll have you guys know that I went to summer camp every year with a giant picture frame of my mother.
Well, then we stand corrected.
I'm totally...
Either that or you're a sad exception to the human race.
Yeah, I'm just like the sad kid who has like a shrine to her mother at summer camp. I miss my mom, you guys.
I left, came back, and got asked why I never called. All right, so we talked about Maureen O'Hara. What do you guys think about Brian Keith as the dad?
I think he did a good job. I haven't really seen him in movies with him in it.
I like him because he looks like this kind of big, beefy, rowdy cowboy type, and yet he's so sensitive, I want to say. He's so vulnerable, and he's so adorably befuddled. I mean, I think the best scene is when he's on the golf course with the daughter, and he thinks she's trying to get him into the birds and the bees sex talk, and he's just kind of stumbling all over it, and she's like, wait, what are you talking about? What are you talking about?
It's like it's a cliche at this point, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, hey, we got to talk about Hayley Mills. What did everyone think of Hayley Mills, other than her accent?
I did like her. I think she was good for someone who wasn't really as experienced yet.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't been in many films before this.
But she comes from a lineage of acting.
She does?
Her father was a very big actor, and so she actually grew up on film sets. And, you know, Laurence Olivier was a family friend that always hung out at the house.
I did not know that.
Yep. Jonathan Mills, who was a very popular actor back in the 30s and 40s.
I have heard of him.
I have the same problem with Hayley Mills that I have with Haley Joel Osment and Dakota Fanning, and that she doesn't feel like a kid.
Hmm.
She feels like a very tiny adult that's sort of like, she's just waiting to grow up so that she can actually be the person she's supposed to be.
Hmm.
The characters are 14, I think, or 13?
Yeah, 13.
13 going on 14.
I thought that kind of worked for her because she felt like someone who was coming into adulthood. And yet, she, you know, she's right at that age where you're still kind of childish, but you're kind of, you're growing up. You're no longer the kid you used to be. Versus, like, if they had filmed this a couple years earlier instead of Pollyanna.
For me, it still, it was the whole, that's just the way she comes across on screen. I don't know what it is. It's something about her that, the even just the manner in which she speaks, she just seems to come across as older.
Maybe it's an English thing.
It could be an English thing. If she had had, like, a Bostonian accent.
Yeah, that was the thing about the accent, which she didn't wasn't able to do anything resembling an American accent. But what I do give her credit for is that she at least put enough distinction between the way the two girls spoke and the way the two girls acted was you could kind of tell them apart, especially during the camp sequences.
Really? I could yep. not tell them apart.
The one, she kind of had a weak American accent in the same way we would have a weak British accent. She was kind of more tomboyish, a little more flamboyant, a little more exaggerating everything with body movements, and the other one was a little more reserved, a little more kind of straight-backed and proper.
I think Susan was the one with the longer hair in the camp. I think she was a little bit more mature and reserved than Sharon, who's from California. And
yeah. And you could kind of see this in the scenes where they would call each other in secret, was they would revert back to those original distinctions. It did kind of blur once you got into the later half of the film and the twins were all together again, and it's kind of like they've become kind of fused. They are no longer distinct anymore.
They're Twinzilla.
Yes. One of the things that I didn't like about this film was they set up this conflict with Vicky, the fiancé. What I actually really liked was that they had her from the moment she kind of, she meets, okay, I can't remember if it's Sharon or Susan, whichever twin it was at that moment. We'll just call it the twin of the given moment.
Okay. But I'm pretty sure that Susan was the one that was supposed to be from Boston.
Okay. Whichever one was the twin of the given moment. When she met the twin at the pool, and right from the start, you could see that she was onto them. That she knew that they were gunning against her, and she was like, in the later scene, you know, you're playing with the big girls now. And the thing I didn't like is you never got the sense of her fighting back. They were constantly taking shots at her again and again and again. And she never got to throw any shots back, so you never got a sense of this battle.
She just gets fed up and storms off.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure if someone poured honey on my feet and had bears attack me, I'm thinking at that point when I was actually rooting for Vicky when she smacked that one twin, I was like, you had it coming.
Yeah.
I'm like, I would have beat you so senseless if you'd done that. I was like, kid had it coming. And at no point should I be sympathizing with Vicky.
What I kind of like is that she's not like a full-on evil antagonist. You know, you get a sense that she does kind of care for the father, but she is trying to find a marriage that'll make her financially stable. And she sees these girls as a threat to that, and so she kind of responds in kind. I don't want to say she's not a bitch, but there is a genuine quality to her. And that does kind of make one feel a bit bad for her. And I kind of like that because it's a bit different than the typical villain, as we'll get to in the remake.
Well, see, I thought the way that it set up, the first time that she ever meets the daughter, the kid basically pulls the regular, you know, I don't want you dating my dad thing, which is, oh, yeah, he goes out with lots of women.
Yes. My horse is used to strange women riding her.
No. And then the second time she sees her is at the country club. The thing that she says, is it her mom or her aunt that's with her?
It's her mom.
Yeah, the thing she says to her mom is that the first thing I do is send her away to a boarding school. I'm like, for reacting like a kid? Jeez, lady.
You know, another thing I noticed, did they ever say what the parents did in this movie?
They really didn't. I think the dad owns the farm.
Is he like a horse breeder or something? They never specified.
They never say, yeah.
And then the mom, they never said
she goes to meetings.
Yes, about the Red Cross.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but I thought that was like a donation or a charity drive or something like that to say that she functions in society. I don't know. It was weird.
That's apparently a job now. I don't know.
I think maybe she was a part of some big charities that she helped ran, maybe.
Well, I think the inference in the original with the mom was that she just came from money.
Yeah.
So she didn't really have to work. She just did charity stuff, which is what rich women did back then.
Yeah, that's true. Also, what I find interesting is the parents never catch on for themselves to the twins' deception. It's peripheral characters, like the housekeeper and the grandfather, that figure things out and confront the girls. The parents never do.
Yeah.
The parents never figure it out for themselves. It's kind of an interesting commentary, and no parent really wants to admit that there's something different or quote-unquote wrong with their child.
They just changed a lot of camp, that's all.
Yeah.
What kids do at camp? They become completely different people.
I bit my nails. You noticed. Speaking of which, I do really enjoy the kind of supporting cast in this movie. The grandfather was great. You get the Reverend Mosby.
Leo G. Carroll, which then had me singing Science Fiction Double Feature in my head. I was like, yes.
And I also love that one of the girls in camp, one of the friend girls in camp, was LaRue from Gidget the TV series, which I'm shocked that I'm like the only person around who's going to get that reference.
I have seen Gidget. I don't remember anybody, but I've seen a few episodes.
I've heard of Gidget the TV show. I've heard Gidget.
I'm the only man on this podcast, and I'm the only one who's watched Gidget.
You're now 10% less manly.
Well, hey, I also got my entire family hooked on Gilmore Girls. So.
I love Gilmore Girls.
Well, it's the best show ever, except for that last season that didn't happen.
Yeah, I've got the whole 6th season set.
Yeah, there was no 7th season.
The songs, what do we all think of the songs?
Which one? The one where the mouse is in the park and she's just randomly singing?
That is like the most forgettable love song of all time.
Yeah.
But I mean, what about Let's Get Together?
It was cute.
It was cute. And it was a good way to show off their split-screen technology. Which I gotta say, I actually really liked the special effects in this film. I thought they actually did a pretty good job with the split screen using a double. And it's surprising that there's like 6 or 7 shots where you can clearly see the double's face. She's looking right at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you wouldn't notice it unless you're looking for it, because the director kind of knows in that moment the audience's attention isn't going to be on her, so it's okay. He can get away with it. I just find that it's a nice little thing to look for when you're like watching this film for like the 3rd or 4th time. It's a nice little surprise to see, hey, that's not Haley Mills.
She actually had to sign something that said that she would not look for, like, money.
Well, no, she got money off it. She just wouldn't get a credit on the film.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
What did everybody think about the opening song with the claymation and the little cherub
creepies? I liked the little John and Marcia. I liked that whole little gimmick. That was actually on Mad Men this past season. They did that in the opening episode.
Really?
That's actually how I remembered that.
I thought the claymation was cute, but at the same time, I'm like, you're telling me the entire story at the very beginning.
Right. And they're not even trying to make the 2 girls look identical during the opening.
Yeah, they give them 2 different colored hair. I'm like, was that the plan all along and they were going to dye them or something? Or no?
Right.
Okay, maybe.
But hey, it's always nice to hear Annette Funicello sing.
I will say one thing about the music, the background music.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote in my notes about 3 times that I wanted the music to stop.
Really?
I think I at one point wrote that it should F off and die.
I had that feeling for the remake.
Instead of like just kind of scoring the scene or kind of underscoring, it doesn't even match what's going on some of the time.
Especially during like the camping scenes and they're playing pranks. Oh God.
Really? See, I never really had a problem with the score in this one. In the next film, I do. It always just kind of blended seamlessly with me. So anything else we want to add about the original?
Half of my notes are about how much I love the clothes.
Yeah.
What was your favorite outfit?
Definitely the mom's dress and the white.
Hmm. Which white one? The one she goes to dinner in, or that kind of spotted one that she first meets Vicky in?
After she changes out of the robe to meet Vicky, and she's all, hi!
Okay, yeah, that was a nice one. Oh, that was another thing, is what woman, after divorcing her husband and not seeing him for like over a decade, suddenly shows up at his house and before even talking to him, goes up to his bathroom, takes a shower, and then throws on his bathrobe and runs around the house in it?
All of them?
Usually when you're dealing with an ex, there's a little bit of a discomfort factor there. So you're not going to suddenly just make yourself at home.
Well, yeah, but that's clearly a movie. And in real life, you can totally just walk into your ex's house and take a shower and then put on their bathrobe and dance around in their kitchen.
I'm sure that's been used as a legal argument a few times.
I like the part where he found the bra in the shower and he's like, what is this?
I love it when then he goes to look at his daughter and is like, is this yours? No.
Or he's like, well, it might be. I don't know. Like, he can't even ask her. He's just sort of like, never mind.
That was nice. Okay, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to add about the film?
Yeah, I think it was fairly good for its time.
Okay, Evie?
Okay, hold on. Let me just read one of my notes here.
Okay.
I hate you, music. I hate you so much. Also, the way that at the very end where she kind of, one of them shoots up and I had the strangest dream, and then they kind of do a dream sequence, but then they fake you out and it's not a dream sequence. I'm like,
and then the movie just ends?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that's an ending. Sure.
I'll give it points for going an unconventional route.
Yeah, but it's sort of just like abrupt, where there's no, it's sort of just like, and it ends.
Yeah.
Because of course it has to end in a wedding.
Yeah. And then the scene before that where the parents are reconnecting in the kitchen, it's like, they are so horny. He's just watching her getting the stuff from the cupboard, and she's like, will you untie my apron?
I love that when she does that, she's taking dishes from the cupboard, and I was like, oh my god, so sexy.
Yes. So, final thought on the movie? Final verdict?
Okay, my final thought on the movie is, what the hell are electric hips, and how the hell does Vicky have them? The end.
Could you elaborate on that one?
Maureen O'Hara's character calls her his child bride with electric hips, and I was like, what does that even mean?
Wow.
Yeah, I don't understand that one.
Are they set to vibrate?
Oh, okay.
This is a Disney movie.
Sorry, I forgot Dana wasn't on this episode.
Yeah, you're not supposed to break me.
I wonder if they come with their own batteries.
These are family-friendly movies, Noel.
Yeah, but nobody said this was a family-friendly podcast.
That's true. Still, stop breaking me. That's not funny.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, so there.
Well, yeah, because you're not the one who got broken.
Well, it's not like I'm trying to describe myself with electric hip.
Ah, damn. Stop it. Or I'll get my cat to co-host.
Okay, that's a good threat. If I don't stop talking about my electric hips, Evie will break out her pussy.
That one was actually funny.
Okay, my final thoughts on the movie is I think it's a classic. It's actually been one of my favorite films ever since it came out. I watch it almost like twice a year. I love every moment of it. I'm always watching it with a smile on my face. There's like not a scene that doesn't make me laugh. And yet, it is very much a film of its time. It is a surprisingly long and dense film from a Disney film of the early 60s at over 2 hours. I mean, as we said, the opening sequence at camp goes on for like 40, 50 minutes. It's like half the movie goes by before we even meet the parents. I think it's a classic. I think it's a great movie, great cast, great script. It is just very much, it is a film of its time. And it's not something that you can always whip out. And well, I actually think there's a lot of moments in it that I think young audiences of today would enjoy. And the fact that it still managed to retain its classic status among young people is good proof to that. But it's a slow film. It feels like it should be a faster film than it is. I think that's about the best way I can say it. So let's move on to the 1998 remake. Do we all like the remake or not?
I love the remake, and I didn't expect to.
What was it that you enjoyed about it?
Well, the thing that I had the problem with the first movie was the pacing, and it just is going at a better clip. The first time that the twins meet isn't the first time that they've been around each other, whereas with the other one, it's more like...
Oh, yeah, where they save the reveal?
Yeah, it's like, you know, they're almost, and then they don't, and they're almost, and then they don't, and I like that. And I love the beginning, the opening sequence, where you kind of get the whole backstory of the marriage.
Yes.
So, and they don't have to do this big info dump, which there's more stuff later, but
you get context.
Yeah, it's just like, you've already kind of seen it, so you don't need someone to explain the whole thing to you.
Yeah, I like that too. Carrie, what did you think?
Well, Lindsay Lohan had the most adorable English accent I've ever heard on an 11-year-old.
Oh yeah, everyone forgets that Lindsay was really good.
She was so, so good.
Yeah, even though this is her first film and she's already talking about sex, drinking alcohol, and jumping into a lake while naked.
How do 11-year-olds get 3 beds on top of a roof?
Yeah, that one always struck me as odd, too.
She was a tomboy, and also was an 11-year-old.
No, that was the English twin that did that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And they come in, and they're like, oh, I'm so tired, and they're all sweaty, they've been playing basketball and swimming and junk, and then...
Because those proper English homes imbue their kids with strong lifting backs.
Well, she had those two friends, so they probably...
She set up a pulley system.
She's English, she had a pulley system, there we go. English people can do that.
Yeah, but remember it was the California girl that had the super, super strong girlfriend who was the tie-dye girl?
Yeah, but the other one had one who wanted to, like, punch out one of the girls, too, so...
That's true. One of the things I had a problem with this, and the kids kind of explained it, is the peripheral characters didn't feel as developed as they were in the original. Like, you don't remember any of the kids at camp, really.
Yeah, but I didn't remember any of the kids at camp in the original, either.
Yeah, I guess so.
That one boy that got left at camp.
Oh, that was a great one, of the boy at the girls' camp.
I think that was brother, or one of her brothers?
Yeah, that was Lindsay's brother, Michael Owen. Because they came up with the idea of that character while they were already shooting, and it's like they looked around and, hey, he was on set, so why not throw him in? And then I also love, there's a girl who's only in 2 shots, but she's the girl who's just, like, covered in backpacks, who's just, like, lugging this huge amount of luggage on her back. They called her the turtle on the audio commentary.
Her and the girl who sounded the bugle horn in the morning.
Oh, God.
I love the bugle horn.
That was hysterical. What did we all think of Lindsay Lohan? Hayley Mills was older and already had several films under her belt, and yet I think Lindsay somehow upstaged her a bit.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I love the accent. It makes me think of Kate Winslet.
Yes.
Okay, admission. The first time I went and saw this movie was in theaters, and I seriously thought she was twins.
Yes.
Like, I thought it was a set of twins playing the two characters.
The thing is about the original film, because I've been watching the original film since I was a child, it wasn't until I was like 11 or 12 that my parents convinced me, no, that's just one girl. And so by the time the remake was coming out, I knew that. But when I saw the trailers and they were kind of showing off some of the newer shots they could do, I'm like, so did they actually get twins this time?
Yeah, no, I thought she was a set of twins.
They did an excellent job of convincing people that, of just the way they shot it and the way they cut it, even just the way she performed it. She matched her eye line so perfectly,
yeah,
and yet didn't feel like she was trying to match a beat.
It's actually just like she's speaking to another actress. It doesn't feel like there's no one there.
Exactly.
I did think she did a better job than Hayley Mills for someone who was younger and who did a very good English accent.
I think the thing is, too, when the two characters that she plays feel like two individual characters, so when they get together, it's not Twinzilla.
Yeah.
They feel like two distinct personalities that are still together, so...
They did a much better job with the distinction and making them separate characters. Yeah, and I actually kind of like the way that they played that in the hotel, which I'm glad they moved it to the hotel so we didn't have the mom running around the ex's house in a bathroom anymore.
Yeah.
them just kind of wandering around, and they are not intentionally confusing everyone by kind of appearing left and right.
Yeah. And plus, we get to see Natasha Richardson act like she schnozzed. That is just awesome.
I just love it when her leg shoots out of the limo.
Yeah.
On you, madam.
Oh, I miss Natasha Richardson.
I know. Seriously, she was like, I watched her in that, and I'm just like, oh, she's the best mom.
She was so awesome. So anyways, Natasha Richardson, what do we think about Dennis Quaid?
You know, I'm not that big of a Dennis Quaid fan. I don't hate him, but he just never really had an impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him here. I don't like him as much as I did the original actor who played the dad.
Brian Keith.
Yes.
Yeah, he felt more like he was acting. He didn't feel quite as naturally into the part as the other actors did. And Brian Keith was just so natural in the original film. Just his mannerisms and everything. And Dennis feels like he's playing a part. But he still got one of the best smiles in the industry.
I did like his scene in the wine cellar with Natasha. That felt really good.
Yes. But now here's the thing. My problem with this film is they never really explain to you why these parents are divorced. Because, you know, when they meet up again, it's like that spark of love is back between them, and they're just kind of, you know, holding apart for appearances' sake and whatnot. And even like the mom, when she
argued and she packed. She packed and he didn't go after her.
In the commentary, they explain it that they met on the cruise ship, they got married on the cruise ship, and the moment they stepped off the cruise ship, reality hit them in the face as they realized just how different their lives were and how much one would have to give up to accommodate the other. They live on opposite sides of the world, and they've each established their own fully successful businesses.
Well, they hadn't at that point, so I think it was more just one wanted to live one place, one wanted to live elsewhere. Because later on, they are having that conversation wherein, oh, so you got that winery up and running. Oh, you're a successful designer and used to draw on napkins.
Okay, see, I didn't pick up on that. But I remember in the script that I read, when the mother is explaining to her daughter, she had this exchange where she said, I moved to California for a while, I just couldn't settle there. He moved to England for a while, he just couldn't settle there, so we just decided to part ways. And since they had only met like a week before they married and were only married for like a month by that point, that's kind of why they just kind of decided to separate. They only stayed together long enough for the babies to be born, but they had pretty much already separated by then. And I didn't feel a reason why these two were apart. In the original, you had a good reason, because every time they get together, they start shouting matches and she punches him.
Then at the same time, in the original, you don't have a reason why they should get back together.
Well,
whereas here, it's like they were both kind of just pigheaded and wouldn't make accommodations for the other person. And so they end up splitting up, even though they should kind of be together because they're both just pigheaded.
Well, Natasha said that we were young and we didn't understand.
See, that's where I got the sense that, you know, they were from two different worlds. They met on the ship. And once they got off the ship, the fantasy died.
I mean, I got that impression just from watching it the first time when I was like 10.
But you see, and then it's like now it's going to be even harder for them to come together because they've established these successful lives and these successful careers. I mean, technically, you know, she is enough of an internationally known designer that she probably could just move to America, but he can't just pack up an entire vineyard and leave.
Sure you can. You just get a suitcase.
You just get a new one in France. They'll move to France.
Yeah.
Close enough to England, right?
Yeah, it works.
But this one, it still has that entire concept of, well, the reason they never got together with anyone else, which is kind of undone by the fact that the dad has, it means that they still secretly love one another, and all we have to do is re-spark and rekindle that love. And it's just, I'm a child of divorced parents. It doesn't work that way.
It's a Disney movie.
I know, but this is 1998.
If anything, it's kind of unfair to kids of divorce, because it gives them that, well, if your parents don't get married right away, you can just get them back together if you try hard enough. And if
right.
you don't, you're not trying hard enough.
Right, just restage their first date.
Though that was cute.
Yeah, I actually kind of liked it a little better in this one, just because it didn't have any singing.
Back then, every Disney movie had to freaking have singing.
Yeah, no, that is a very good question. Is this a healthy thing to show kids a divorce? Because what are the expectations it builds then? It's, are your parents breaking up because they don't love one another, or is it because circumstances are merely pulling them apart, and if you try to change the circumstances, then they'll come back together? And on one hand, I do like that it kind of empowers the kids to say that, you know, the parents have been making all the decisions. Why don't you let us make a few of the decisions now? But where that ultimately leads is still kind of a very unrealistic place.
I just go with it's a movie. I'm like, even watching it when I was younger, and I'm like, that would never happen. It doesn't work that way. And I kind of understood that that was a movie and that wasn't how real life works. So I think it also depends on the kid.
You know, what's interesting is it's a dual film. You have a kid's movie where they're trying to mess with the parents, and then you do have the good grown-up romantic drama comedy. So it's a film that kids and adults can both really get something from. The original film, I think, kind of clashed those two a little bit. It wasn't as smooth as the remake, tonally, and I think that might have been why it went as long as it did. But yeah, it is interesting how they're trying to be an adult romantic dramedy and a kid's movie at the same time. It's an interesting balancing act.
Well, it's Nancy Meyer, so she does a lot of movies like that, too.
Yeah.
Not all of them, mind you, but there are some where it's sort of clean enough that kids can watch it, but it's complex enough that adults will enjoy it.
Yeah, no, it is an interesting thing. And then why don't we talk about Meredith, the fiancé?
I love Elaine Hendricks.
She was so awesome. I love her, like, sexy saxophone solo that's, like, her musical cue.
Yes, the old femme fatale intro.
She's, like, a combination of Cruella de Vil, Madonna, and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, my only problem with her is she's so obviously evil and so just in it for the money that how did the dad not even see through this?
Well, Dennis Quaid is kind of hot, so...
In the original, she was still a little more understated and a little more believable. In this one, she's so over the top at times.
But at the same time, you kind of see, like, when she's first talking to... I guess it's Annie playing as Haley.
Yeah.
When you first see her, when she talks to her, she's being really nice. And then you see her...
Well, she's a publicist.
Yeah, but...
That's what she does. She lures people in.
But again, that's how you could see how the dad could fall for her, because she can be really, really sweet and then turn around in like 3 seconds flat and be completely bitch-faced.
And also she turns around and snogs him at any time she can.
Yeah. I like when she does that on the camping trip.
Yes, where it's like the kids are messing with her, so she just turns around, gives a huge kiss to the dad, and suddenly everything's in her favor.
I like, because at least with this one, there was that, whereas in the original, you never really had her fight back at all.
And also the fact that they were kind of upfront about the sexuality of it.
Mm-hmm.
In the original, they kind of had to dance around it with Haley Mills saying, "I have noticed that you are very well put together." That was about as far as they could go.
Yeah.
And I love how he never once thinks when he finds the bra that, oh, could this be Vicky's? No.
No.
Because this is a film in 1961. I would never have a woman sleep here that I'm not married to. She's very good. I think the actress is very good. I just think it's a little too broad for my taste.
But the thing, I liked it that she was just evil, because when then they pulled those pranks on her, like, you know, they leave the air mat. I like that they cut out the fact that they put honey and let a bear attack her feet. Yeah, it was the air mattress in the middle of the lake. I'm like,
bird.
Well, she's a total bitch. Of course you would put her air mattress in the middle of the lake. Whereas the original is like, they're kind of being mean to her. She's not exactly approachable, but
right.
She didn't really do anything. Whereas this one, I'm like, she's kind of a bitch. You would see why she would do that.
Right. And then I actually really, really like the moment where she walks up and says, it's either me or them. And the dad just unhesitatingly says them.
T-H-E-M.
Yes. And then I think the one problem, though, is that she kind of ruins her hand by saying before that, the first thing I'm going to do is ship those kids off to Switzerland. Of course, the dad's going to instantly turn on her.
Yeah.
But I just love the shot when she walks up and just punts the coffee pot.
That was awesome.
Let's say this before I forget. The actress that played Vicky played her mother.
Yep.
Yeah.
I wish they had given her just a little more to do, because she just kind of like popped up for a cameo and then just kind of hung in the background for a while.
I'm here for my cameo. Goodbye.
And, you know, like, the mom, she actually had a couple nice moments in the original. I mean, that was the thing is, in the original, every character, even the small little peripheral ones, is fully defined as a character. In the remake, you have a lot of these moments where someone just kind of shows up and then just kind of says their line and then just disappears again. And Vicky, the mother version of Vicky, is a good example of that. They didn't do anything with her.
Yeah, but they didn't really need to.
Yeah.
Because with the other one, there was so much more for her to do, but at the same time, I didn't particularly care about the mother character in the original.
Yeah.
Whereas here, she just sort of pops up, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
She and the dad kind of pop up just to show exactly where Meredith came from, and I'm like, yeah, these people are really all about money, so of course Meredith's going to be all about money.
That's true. And of course, the majority of the mother's role in the original is tied to Reverend Mosby, who's been entirely cut out of this except for the little vocal cameo.
Yeah.
Well, in the remake, they didn't even have the grandmother. They just had the grandfather.
Yeah, you didn't really need the grandmother. I mean, the only reason for the grandmother in the original one was to show how henpecked the grandfather was and then have him stand up to her. So you didn't really need that.
Yeah.
And then once you develop the character of the butler, you know, that kind of takes
I love the butler.
There's a couple moments where they kind of go over the line for me, just in terms of tone. Like, I love the Speedo bit, but I don't love the bit where he's walking down the stairs in biker leathers all of a sudden.
Hey, it was only a leather jacket, and it was awesome. Those were black jeans.
I thought they were leather pants.
They weren't leather pants, they were black jeans.
Okay, but then he had those big boots with the studded toes.
I like the mother's line about him being more a lovable brother who just happens to wait on them.
Yes. I love how he's like, if I were going to meet my ex and I had your legs,
I'd wear this.
You'll kill in it. And I love that they had him and the housekeeper hook up.
That was cute. He knew that was going to happen, though.
Yeah.
It was obvious from the very beginning. Although, is it very respectful for butlers to dance with their clientele?
Yeah, but he's more like a brother who just happens to wait
on
them.
Who waits on them? I love the housekeeper when she finds out that it's not Hallie, but Annie, and her reaction.
Can I hug her?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the dad has no idea what's going on, but I'm like, well, that's a genuine reaction when you find out it's this kid that you really haven't seen in a long time, but you know exists, but you can't say anything.
Yeah, I know. It's like in the original, it's like she tells her off screen.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all she does is take the one little jab at the dad, like, you didn't know a good thing when you had it. You didn't really see that reaction. And you got that reaction here, and I thought that was just so great. You know, and then that was another great moment in that sequence was I actually really loved it in the original where the twin just starts playing the piano, and it takes like 2 minutes for the dad to catch on that she's playing a piano. When did you learn to play the piano? At camp. That's pretty good. 5 weeks.
It's like the French thing in the remake.
Yeah, and in the remake, they changed it to she starts swearing in French, though he's instantly like, when did you learn French? What I loved about the original was she plays it for like 2 minutes before he catches on, once again showing how clueless the parents are in this movie.
I like the reveal to the mother more in the remake than in the original, because in the original she was just so loud about it, screaming at the mother.
But I hate these music lessons, I hate it. And she's out there riding my horse and having a blast of a time.
I love in the original where it's like, you interrupted your grandmother, and I'm like, initiable offense.
I love it where the grandfather is like, if my opinion means anything in this house, and I very much doubt that it does. And that was the thing in the remake is when he finds her at the phone booth is, you know, this is an 11-year-old girl who just ran full speed and the grandfather manages to catch up with her in like a minute. Is he like an elderly sprint runner or something? Or
maybe he took a cab.
Yeah, I'm like either A, he's a really good runner, or B, he just caught a cab or something.
But I never quite got how he caught on to what was going on. I mean, she could have just said, I was talking to a girl I met in camp. In the original, he's hearing both sides of the conversation, so he can hear that it's the same voice talking back and forth, and knows enough to put together that, oh, it's the twins. In this one, it's just like, why did you sneak away to talk on a phone? She could have just said, I called a girl from camp.
Well, I got the impression that he and Annie were just very close.
Hmm.
When she's describing her grandfather, like, even in just that little bit about, you know, when she's showing...
Making a memory?
No, when she's showing Hallie the picture of her grandfather. Mm-hmm. Like, this is grandfather, and it sort of gave me the idea that, yeah, she would have been kind of close with her grandpa, so he would pick up on little things that she did differently.
Right.
What do we call him? Grandfather.
Yes.
That's what I called my grandpa.
I call mine Papa.
I don't. We're Polish. We're very proper. We don't do that.
What do we think of Natasha drunk?
Greatest thing in all movie history ever. Even better than Rosebud. It makes Rosebud look like crap.
I never had vodka before this.
I love it. She's like, later when it's Annie, and she's like, she's never had more than like a glass of wine in her entire life. And she's just like plastered. But the thing is, like, once she actually sees Nick, she kind of just immediately sobers up.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't entirely realistic, but at the same time.
No, she had like this goofy look on her face.
Well, by the time she encounters him, everyone's been running around for like an hour.
Yeah. I like when he first sees her and he's making out with Meredith in the elevator, and he just like sees her, and as the elevator's closing, he just like sort of slides with it.
But yeah, I think the fall into the swimming pool wasn't... That felt a little more staged than it did in the original.
I figured that was just like, they did it in the original, so they're doing it here.
Yeah.
You know what? I went with it. I thought it was kind of funny.
Okay. Oh, that was another scene I loved, where the mother meets the fiancé, and they don't know that they're the mother and the fiancé. It's like, oh, you're the famous fashion designer. I tried calling your office. And then you got that great moment of, how do you know each other? How do you know each other?
You know what I realized watching the remake?
What?
The two careers that they chose seem to tie back to their wedding. where that wine that they drank ends up becoming, you know, a winemaker. And she didn't have a wedding dress. So, you know, to make sure the brides don't go without, she now designed the wedding dresses.
Oh, that is interesting. But, you know, that's interesting that that was a sequence that they actually added after they had filmed the main film. They added that in reshoots. So it is interesting how they kind of went and retroactively worked that setup in. That was a good catch. Okay, so Carrie wanted to talk about the camping scene. Carrie, what would you have to say about the camping scene?
I felt like some of the bits were, like, too gimmicky. Like
the lizard?
The lizard, like, on the bottle was fine. But when it, like, gets in her mouth, I was just like, yeah, that wouldn't happen.
I liked it that they dropped it on her head and she didn't know about it for, like, a minute. But, yeah, when you get the CGI one.
When it gets into her mouth.
I liked that they kept in the banging of the sticks.
I can't remember. Did they show that actually, like, them telling her?
No, but did you need to?
Yeah, that's true. It was just funny.
Right. I mean, you didn't really need the setup because as soon as she says it and realizes it's fake, she just turns and you just know who it was that told her.
Yeah.
Just like they gave her the sugar water bug spray.
Right, yeah. I do like the reference. It would have been from the old movie of the an old Indian wise man or something, or an Indian medicine man or something.
Yes.
I don't like trout. What are we having for breakfast? Trout.
Trout. The thing is, the three of them say it, so it's like in the original, it was just that one kind of helper guy.
Yeah, Hacky.
Who was he? Was he like a housekeeper?
He was like the groundskeeper.
And went camping.
Well, yeah, and he was also the dad's friend, so. He's like the best buddy who couldn't get a job, so hey, why don't you come and keep up my place? I swear I'll let you go camping with us every now and then, you just carry the things.
It's usually how it works, isn't it?
Oh, that was the thing about the original, was the horse riding. You would think the gal from Boston wouldn't know how to ride a horse and that they would play that up for comedy. But no, she's just as good of a horse rider as her sister.
Yeah, of course.
And they never go with the whole thing, like with the dog didn't recognize her, you'd think the horse wouldn't recognize her either. All right, is there anything else we want to add about the remake?
In the end, where they get on the plane and they get there sooner than them.
The Concorde, yeah.
Does that really happen?
Oh yeah, the Concorde still existed back then. It actually doesn't exist anymore now. They stopped it. But yeah, there was the Concorde where it's a much more expensive line, but it gets you there in half the time. That is now a dated element of this movie, in that the Concorde no longer exists. Evie, do you have any other points you wanted to bring up?
I like the little touches that they put in, like the Oreos with the peanut butter.
Yes.
Because it is an odd way to eat a cookie.
Yeah.
Or the photograph halves.
You know, what I liked the photograph halves, what I thought was they didn't need to do the lockets. They then do the lockets after the photograph halves, and it's like, once you do the photograph halves, you don't need to do the lockets.
That one, I just kind of chalked it up to some people, if they have twins, they do that, where they get their kids' lockets. They didn't have to show it, but it was cute.
It's like an extra 30 seconds there that we can just cut out and no one's going to miss.
Yeah, I don't know why they put, I can't remember, it was like such a non-event.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, though, was when they're in the wine cellar, mm-hmm. and they're about to kiss, and then Natasha backs up, and she just gets that line of light across her eyes, and it was so old school, the magical line of light. And I just love that, because it felt very old school.
Yes. Okay, well, why don't we move on to final thoughts? Carrie, what are your final thoughts when it comes to the remake?
I like it.
Just that? You like it?
I do like it.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, there are some points where you're just like, really? Like the whole bed thing?
Yeah. I thought the fencing was gratuitous, too.
Well, yeah, well, I think it would make sense for the English one to know fencing, but...
Yeah, I just thought it was a little too long of a scene for me. Evie, what are your final thoughts on the movie?
I really liked it, but there was one problem that I had, because it didn't... There's the big, giant elephant-in-the-room gaping plot hole that they never bother to answer in either one, and that's, like, the twins. The parents go and separate them, but they never tell them that the other one exists, and I'm like, that's just bad parenting.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the parent doesn't even seem to, neither one of them seems to seek out the other twin, like, parent-wise.
And yet, then when they show up, they're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, I understand you guys have a divorce agreement, but you don't go looking for your kid, like, you don't even want to see them, or...
Yeah.
It made no sense.
With me, this is a good example of how a remake can be well, and how a remake can be a beneficial thing, and that it's such a good, simple story, and that you can update it to make it relevant to new generations. It's not about... You know, Dana was complaining in the last episode about how we update things because we don't think that new generations are smart enough to handle the old ones. No, it's just they want something that they can relate to themselves. This is a way to update it where this is now a whole new generation of kids can grow up with this story in a way that is their own, in a way that is for them. This is a good example of how a remake can work, and plus it's just a damn well-made remake.
It really is.
It has a few little nitpicks here and there, but so does the original. It's a strong story, strong cast, strong script. It's very well made. I think it's a good film.
Well, yeah, I think this is one of the cases where I can like both equally and still have problems
yes.
with different problems, but it can't work for everything, like Psycho.
Right, where they don't even try to make it generationally relevant. It's just, let's shoot it exactly the same and everyone will love it. No, they won't. Now, if you guys will humor me, I did read the original novel that was published in Germany back in 1949. I just want to tell you guys a little bit about some of the differences there. And it's pretty much structurally the same. The difference is that the mother is a photo editor in a newspaper. The dad is a composer. And it's very much the same story in terms of the girls meet at camp, they swap identities, they find out that dad has a new girlfriend, and they decide to bring the parents back together. In this one, though, it has the old-fashioned problem of the parents get back together in the end, not because they truly love each other, but because that's what's best for the kids, because that's what's best to make a stable family in this day and age.
So how did they break up?
They broke up because the dad, as a composer, would be leaving like every day to go to his studio, and he wouldn't spend enough time at home. And so the mom wanted to be more of a hands-on family. So she took the one girl and raised her very close and raised her at home, and that's why she's kind of prim and proper. Whereas the girl that was left with him was still abandoned because he would keep going across town all day long to spend time at his studio, so she was neglected. So she turned into kind of a tomboy. And the big solution they have at the end is, well, why don't you just rent out the apartment next door and make that your studio so you don't have to go all the way across town all day? It's like that's the grand solution to their marital problems.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Really.
What?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's such an old-fashioned ideal. I mean, there are some good bits in the book in terms of at camp, the girls actually swap identities first just to test it out, and you get a lot of nice shenanigans where even their friends that they've made at camp can't tell them apart anymore. And then there's a great bit where before they realized they were sisters and they were just, you know, two girls who look a lot alike, the camp kind of had them pose for a photo that they submitted to the local newspaper. And the revelation that's made to the mom where she realizes that, you know, her two daughters have met and swapped is when the newspaper that she's the photo editor for picks up this little local story. So she's just sitting there in her editor's office going through the stories, and here she suddenly sees a picture of her two daughters. And she excuses herself and she just has to cry in her office for like half an hour. I just thought it was a very, very touching sequence. I don't know, the book has some good scenes, but it's kind of really choppily written, and the whole marital thing is just ridiculous.
How old are they in the book?
In the book, they're 10, so about the same age as they are in the Lindsay Lohan one. The parents broke them up when they were a year old. So it's like, you know, after 9 years, we've solved our marital problems by getting the apartment next door.
They couldn't have figured that out earlier.
Oh, and the book has this creepy moment when the two daughters are kind of like gotten to the point where nobody can tell them apart, even themselves. They've been imitating each other for so long that they've kind of just taken on a dual personality almost. And they go, well, what's going to happen when the two of you grow up and decide to marry? Well, the twins say, we'll just find one man that we both love, and then one of us can have him half the week and the other can have him the other half of the week, and we won't tell him the difference, and we'll let him have Sundays off.
It's kind of something a 10-year-old would say, though.
It is, but it's like, yay, polygamy.
I don't know, I kind of thought it was funny.
It was a weird book. It's out of print. It's not an easy book to find. It's only been printed over in America a few times. I had to get one from the 80s. Well, I can kind of see why Disney has let it go out of print.
Really? Because I'm so shocked. The polygamy would just be so awesome. Everyone high-five me.
No, and it's literally like the end of the book is one of those moments from like an old TV show from the 70s or 80s where someone tells a bad joke and everyone laughs at it, and then it like freezes on everyone laughing as the credits start. Oh, we'll both marry the same guy and we'll give him Sundays off. Everyone laughs. The end. It was a strange book. I thought they did a very good job of making it better in both these versions. And I'd actually like to check it out. It's a book that's actually been adapted to film in a number of countries. There's Germany's made several versions. I believe England has. There's a Japanese version that can be watched on YouTube with subtitles, which is a very odd one. I've only gotten about halfway through it myself. I think the Disney one, though, did a good job of, let's take the basic structure of the story, but we can be a little loose with the details. And I thought David Swift, when he did the original, did a very good job of really getting into more of the relationships and the way people work and the way people talk. And it feels much more like an authentic story. I still don't get how two girls just wind up at the same random summer camp, especially in the remake, where a girl from England ends up at the same summer camp as a girl from California.
Well, they said that the parents had picked them. Like, in the remake, it's that the parents had picked the summer camps.
Yeah.
Why would an English mother want to send her daughter to camp in America? They don't have camps in England?
Right, they have camps in Europe. Well, and the camp, according to the audio commentary, the camp is in New England. And it's like, why would someone in California send his daughter to a camp in New England when I'm pretty sure they got camps out in California?
Well, maybe they don't have forests out in California.
Send her up to Washington, you know?
Dude, Washington's rainy. No one wants to go to Washington. I'm sorry, Washington, I love you.
Unless your name is Swan.
Yeah, then you know what? Then you could just sparkle and die. Those stupid Twilight hate it so much. I'm fine.
Okay, so we all pretty much agree then that the original was a good film, but it's a film of its time, and that the remake is itself also a good film?
Yep.
Okay. I think this is one of the rare episodes where we're going to have that reaction, where we both kind of just like them both.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's going to wrap us up then. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of I Hate/Love Remakes. Carrie, thank you very much for being our guest this evening.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for listening. Please join us again next month when Evie and I discuss Godzilla. If you enjoyed this episode, please check us out at www.ihateloveremakes.com. We've left the comment sections open, so please let us know what you think about the films we've discussed. Speaking of which, I Hate/Love Remakes is in no way affiliated with the copyright holders of the films discussed. All rights are reserved and no infringement is intended. I Hate/Love Remakes is a Made of Fail production.
I'm adorable.
Yeah, well, you are. And you get by it because of your laugh.
Thank God I sound like a devious chipmunk falling out of a tree. I'm glad that no one told me I sounded like a 14-year-old boy.
No, well, nobody likes the way they sound. I hate the way I sound. I'm just used to it.
And the thing is, too, I realized that I didn't sound like a 14-year-old boy because if I did, Dana would have been hitting on me. Yeah, I've been holding that joke in for a while.